Welcome to Juno Afternoon on the beginning of our Labor Day weekend. I'm Rhonda McBride, inviting you to settle in for some conversation. And coming up, the Riverview Senior Living Project, years in the making, and now one step closer to finally being realized. We'll also visit with Lou Isaac, a Juno artist who has spent her life working hard to master several art forms, from painting to sketching the human form. She'll share her journey of discovery. Also, Richard Stokes shares some of his poetry, and we also have Brenda Wright from the Juno Audubon Society sharing her love of birds. Now for your Labor Day forecast, a chance of rain every day all the way through the middle of next week. Rain tonight with lows around 50 degrees, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Juno Afternoon, we'll be right back after National Native News. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and thank you for being here with us this afternoon as we head into the Labor Day weekend, which is historically a time of transition, and perhaps with the rainy weather ahead, time out inside for reflection. But for our next guest, it's also a time of celebration. Next week, the Riverside Senior Living Community will break ground on a new project, and Sue Douglas, who has worked on that for more than a decade, is here to talk about what it's been like to bring this project to fruition. Welcome, Sue, and maybe you could start off by telling us a little bit about some of the struggles that people have had trying to get the right facilities that seniors need.
I'm really glad to be here and tell what I consider a really good news story. With all the pandemic and hurricanes and flooding and wildfires and Afghanistan and climate changes, it's really nice to be able to tell a good news story that should hopefully make everyone listening this afternoon feel a little better. Anyway, I hope so. This is an 11-year story, and it's too long to tell all the details, but suffice to say that about 11 years ago, a very small handful of people had a conversation following the publication of the 2010 Senior Survey. And in that survey, we were informed that the top priority for seniors at that time was senior housing and senior care. And we kind of hunched that. We knew something had to be done, and we chose to carry that conversation further. We connected with an organization, a small nonprofit called Senior Citizen Support Services, Inc., commonly called SCSSI. It's a mouthful any way you say it. SCSSI was responsible for getting Fireweed Place, apartment complex downtown, which is a place for seniors who can live independently. They were responsible for getting that built back in the early 90s. So they had a mission to support seniors. Move forward, we continued to talk to SCSSI. They decided to take on this project, this initiative, to see what we could do about bringing senior assisted living and care to Juno for our elders.
So can I stop you there and just ask you, what were the needs then? Can you tell us some stories, some real life stories about the dilemmas that people face because of the gap in senior housing projects?
Yes. The most glaring stories that continued over the years and will so until we get Riverview Senior Living built and operating is that many of our elders are having to leave Juno. People who need assisted care don't have anywhere to go. And the only assisted living we have in Juno is our wonderful Pioneer Home. We're glad to have it. People have been served so well for so long. There's only 47 beds there, though. And most of the residents there are experiencing dementias or Alzheimer's. So it cannot meet by any means the full spectrum of assisted care for our elders that is needed. So that's the most glaring thing. We're losing people. And when they have to move out of the community, what happens is we lose their wisdom, we lose their money, we lose their part in our economy. It affects their families broadly. So we don't want that to happen. And bringing Riverview here is going to be wonderful.
Well, if you go to our website, ktoo.com, and you look on the Juno Afternoon page, I've got an artist rendering up there of the Riverside Senior Living Community. It looks like a big building. Can you tell us a little bit about where this building is located, why it was located there, and what it will offer the seniors?
Yes, part of the due diligence and the work that SCSSI did through the years was to really scope out where could such a place be built. And the final obvious decision was out in what is called Vintage Business Park, just the other side of Safeway, along the Mendenhall River, in a really beautiful location and a very buildable location. It's near a couple of grocery stores, it's near the swimming pool, it's near the post office. It's just a great location. So that was decided fairly early on, and SCSSI even put money down on that property a couple of times a few years ago. And fortunately, the current developers are building on that property. So it will be an 86-unit residence. There will be 57 assisted living apartments and 29 units for what is commonly known as memory care, people who experience dementias and Alzheimer's.
So when do you expect this facility to be able to open? I know that construction is beginning now, but a lot of times these things take a while to get off the ground.
This is a very large project, and fortunately, it did get started a couple of weeks ago. Real construction is starting right now. If you drive out there along Clinton Drive on the back of Vintage Park, you can see it happening. It's very exciting. And we expect for the community to open and be operational by early 2023. That's the best estimate right now.
You know, a lot of communities around the country of similar size to Juno have had assisted living programs operating, a number of them in the private sector. Why is it that it's taken Juno this long to get something of this size that you really need to fill the needs?
That's a legitimate question, and people get tired of hearing it, but it's true. We are a unique community. We're the third largest city in the state, but let's face it, we're still only 32,000 people. We have no roads in or out. It's very hard for experienced operators and developers and investors to understand all the ramifications of building in a so-called isolated community. The other factor is, let's face it too, it's expensive to build here. The shipping of materials is expensive to bring into Juno. So there's a real combination of factors that it wasn't a slam dunk in the beginning at all. It was finding somebody willing to dig deeper and figure out the advantages to investing here and finding ways to do it. And fortunately, we're at that point now.
So I guess the logistical questions, who is building it, who is owning it, who is operating it, and what are the partnerships?
Well, when SCSSI started this initiative, all along we knew that part of the challenge was to find a developer and or operator who would want to do this. We never had any intentions of trying to do this ourselves. What did we know about that? We needed experts. So that was part of the hunt. And very fortunately, over a couple of years ago, a developer by the name of Torrey Pines Development Group, they're out of San Diego, contacted us and eventually totally committed to this project. Now, what they do is, because they're developers and they will continue to own the property, because they're developers, they contract with experienced operators. North Star Senior Living is coming to Juno and will be the people to manage and operate the community. And they have vast experience. I'm very excited about them. I've been working closely with them the past several months. I think they're going to be wonderful. They have a great philosophy on making senior communities feel like home and taking care of individual needs. So I have high hopes, and I don't think we're going to be disappointed.
So I understand that originally there was going to be a meeting coming up for people who are interested in this housing project to attend and find out more. But what's happened with that meeting?
Well, it was scheduled for next Wednesday night, September 8th, at Centennial Hall. It was going to be an open house, meet and greet, meet North Star, meet Torrey Pines, look at plans, learn about costs, which I don't have yet, so I can't say it over the air. I'm sorry, I don't have them. And to pay a deposit and pick an apartment if you're ready to do it. Unfortunately, because of COVID and the new Delta variant, they're very, very cautious, which I deeply appreciate. Disappointed, but they've postponed this meeting now till early spring. And there'll be the same opportunity as I just described in the spring for people to come to it. And we'll keep everybody really informed well about this.
Boy, if it's not one thing, it's another. Always hurdles along the way. And I guess the potential that COVID could make it challenging for you to get that place filled up initially.
Well, it's very surprising. For something that we're not going to see operational until early 23, we've already received several deposits. People are so excited, and this is meeting a really pent-up demand. So I anticipate we'll fill quickly, if not completely right away, still quickly. And I would advise anybody who is interested to learn more. There's a number I can give you. People can call it. I can send information to them. It's easy to be in touch and learn more. And that number is 907-723-2282.
I'm writing it down, 723-2282, if people want to get more details about this. But if we walked into that building and it was as if it was portrayed in the artist's rendering, what would I see? What would seniors be greeted with?
Well, you see a very large atrium central room that is lovely and very conducive to bringing in cultural activities and public activities that will entertain the residents. You'll see a view of the river all the way through that front entry to the back. You'll find out that there's restaurant-style dining. There's private dining options. There's a bistro, an in-house movie theater, fitness center, multiple activity rooms, library, upstairs and downstairs gathering rooms, a beauty salon, massage room, laundry services, and much more. So there'll be a lot there for people to enjoy.
So I guess I know you're not ready to talk about the price yet because those things are still being worked on, but one has to wonder, is this going to be a place that only the elite and well-heeled can afford?
No, and that's been our goal all along, that this is for everybody who's eligible. In Juneau, we don't want a high-end retirement resort. We want something that serves everybody. So there will be some Medicaid beds available. I don't know how many, but there will be some. And we can learn more about that probably in the near future.
Well, it looks like you've got people already trying to reach you about this. I hear your phone ringing in the background there. So maybe the demand is more pent up than perhaps we realize. So what is going to be the philosophy of this place? Because in the flyers and other material about it, it's referred to as a community. And of course, when you're dealing with people who have Alzheimer's, dementia, memory issues, they're hard sometimes to include in a community.
Right, and we use the term community because that's what it is. It's going to be. It's a lovely place for people to gather and for people to reside. It's not a facility, and we don't. I don't like that term, and I don't use it. So I think community is a better description of a residence where seniors can live comfortably and safely and in a place that they can call home.
Of course, when you have programs like this and communities like this, you know, the dollar sign is a difficult thing to balance. And as many people in Juneau may recall, the Fireweed Place ran into financial difficulties. And I guess the Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority wound up buying it, and that stabilized it. But what are you doing with this project to be sure that it stays stable financially?
Well, my confidence is in the fact that a very successful, stable owner is investing. Torrey Pines Development already owns four other properties outside of the state. They have a good record of success. They're very financially stable. They go into this kind of development very specifically to do this kind of service for a community. So I have full confidence in them. And then the breadth and depth of the experience of the operator. Torrey Pines would not contract with them if they didn't have the confidence in them. So I think the thing that's really beautiful is CBJ did give some financial incentives to help Torrey Pines get started. And it was so appropriate because of, as I said, the high cost to get started here. So by doing that, they enabled Torrey Pines to get moving as quickly as they could once all their financing was arranged. And COVID didn't help. There were some delays due to COVID. But what transpired is we have what I call the absolutely best kind of private-public alliance going on, where the citizen-led, CBJ participated, and now privately owned. That's a good combination in my book.
When you talk about, you know, the need for this project, a lot of the literature that you see pitching it talks about this so-called silver tsunami, this senior earthquake coming.
Right.
And those are rather dramatic ways to characterize this problem. But, of course, this project was initiated from a senior surveys back 10 years ago or more. And has that picture changed very much since then, or is it even more dire?
The 2020 senior survey indicated the same thing, only with a greater emphasis, more need. So it clearly has grown. The Department of Labor would tell us now that we probably have over 20% of Juneau's population is seniors. That's going to grow. We've been saying all along that at some point in time here in the not too far away future, that 25% of our population will be elders. So it's a fourth of our population. We need to take care of them. We want to keep them here. And Riverview will help a lot.
Well, I imagine for a lot of families with elders that has got to be a very difficult decision, because you know, they may have to move if they want to continue to be close to their elder, if they have to take them out of state or move perhaps to Anchorage or somewhere else. So I guess, you know, in wrapping things up here, can you talk about some of the feelings that you've had over the years that have pushed you to stay with this project?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes I question myself about that. You know, I think so much of it had to do with we had huge community support. Nobody said this was a lousy idea. We also had a great group of people on SCSSI that kept us going, and with a variety of talents that lent to it. We had wonderful support from a local architectural firm, Northwind Architects, who were greatly supportive and inspirational in the early pre-development of this. We had total support from CBJ, although I will say, and I commend them highly for this, they thought about this carefully, thoughtfully. There was lots of debate. They needed a lot of numbers. And they came through once it was done in a very, I think, good due diligence way, if I can put it that way. So I think we're in a good place now, and I'm just thrilled with it all.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today to help us find out a little bit more about this project. Sue Douglas with the Riverside Senior Living Project. And, you know, the years go by before you know it. So congratulations, Sue, and others who envision this project and for helping to get it off the ground. And please come back and give us an update. And, of course, you've got that meeting coming up in the spring that we've got to tell people about as well. But give us regular progress reports, please.
I would love to do that, Rhonda. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Stokes. I like to write about seasonal change. I've been in Juneau since 1971, so I figure I've seen about 200 Juneau changes. So the poem that I want to read is titled September. Yellow cottonwood leaves flutter through green siblings, settle softly on the trail. In the air, a hint of pungency and sockeyes, their green heads and red bodies so vivid in July, now dulled and films creamed by fungus. The bears fish full, now biting into only eggs or brains. Less daylight on each day's clock, fireweed already in cotton. Soon, too soon, south-pointing V's of geese will hawk over powdered peaks.
Richard Stokes sharing his poem September here on a September Juneau afternoon.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hi, this is Juneau Afternoon, a show that in many ways is a random walk across the airwaves. I'm Rhonda McBride, and what I enjoy most is learning about the seemingly random events in life that set people on some kind of a journey of discovery. We have that a lot here on this show. And such is the case with our next guest, Lou Isaac, who is September's featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery. And she has a First Friday event tonight, which we'll talk about later on in this segment. But Lou, I have to ask, everybody loves a good story. So let's start with how you came to pick up a paintbrush. And that was at a very young age, I understand.
It was at a young age. I was 5 years old, and I was growing up in the Los Angeles area, and we moved into a new subdivision that had hardly anybody in it. There was one, I have two brothers, and playing with boys didn't really interest me, but there was one other girl in the neighborhood, and she lived in back of me, and she was quite a bit older than I was, so she was being very kind to play with this little girl. So I would go over to her house, and we would, she would sort of direct the activities. And her father was an animator with Disney. And so she grew up drawing. And I would go over there, and she'd get out her paper and pencils and color things. And we would just sit and draw. And I loved it. I decided right then and right there that I was an artist, and I was always going to be an artist. And I've managed to hang on to that fantasy for many, many years and brought great joy to myself.
How interesting. That has to be more than a coincidence, don't you think, when things like that happen in life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some things are meant to be.
Well, you, having started so young, have had a chance to master different kinds of art. And maybe let's start with one type of art that you do, which is drawing nudes from live models. And I guess there's a term for that, but maybe you could explain how you got started with that.
Okay, so that's life drawing, and that is a typical way to learn how to draw in a traditional art education, which is called an academic education. It's called academic because it used to be done in academies where master artists would take on apprentices and they would learn to do their art form by watching and participating with the artist. And the universities in the 70s, when I was going to university, were still mimicking this academic art education. And so all the art students took life drawing, which is what it's called. And I was probably maybe 18 when I started doing life drawing. It's shocking the first time you walk into a class and someone comes in and takes their clothes off and they sit down in front of you and you need to draw them. However, I loved it and I still love it. And it's an important thing to me. I think if you can learn to respond to and draw another human being, you can learn to draw anything.
So what is it about drawing the human form? Because it is very complicated. You've got muscles that are defined and you almost have to like see underneath the skin to be able to portray the human body.
Well, that's true. You need to know a lot about anatomy, but you also are looking at them from a unique point of view. And so you don't see necessarily all the anatomy, but you see how it foreshortens from your point of view. So in addition to the anatomy, there are all kinds of other things about understanding space and trying to take three-dimensional space and indicate it on a flat surface.
So you do so many other kinds of art. You know, I've seen, and we have a couple of examples of your work on our website on the Juno Afternoon page on ktoo.com. You can go there and you've got a painting of an elephant swimming underwater. You've got kind of a patch of bog with some wildflowers in it. And then, of course, we have one of your sketches, your life art sketches. So did one inform the other? Did the sketching of the human form somehow help you with other forms of art?
Absolutely. Because we have such bonds to other human beings that when you're trying to figure out how to indicate a solid object in space on a flat surface, and it happens to be the thing that's most important to you in the world, which is the other members of your species, you start paying attention to things and learn many different ways of resolving those same kinds of issues. And so the way you would resolve it with a pencil on a piece of paper and the way you resolve it in clay and the way you resolve it in paint on a flat surface are all different. But those kinds of things sort of become second nature when you do them over and over again, just like anything that you learn, by repeating that and trying it in a different way and trying it in a different material. All those things collate in your brain and you understand the three-dimensional and the two-dimensional and they inform each other. And it's a pretty exciting process.
A lot of people are intimidated. You know, I am kind of when I go to the Juno Artist Gallery and I see so many samples of fine work locally and I think, oh, boy, I'll never be able to do that. But I once knew an art teacher who said, really, all there is to art are two things, a straight line and a curved line. And that's all you need to know and you can go from there. Is it really that easy?
I don't know. That's probably not what I would have said when somebody asked me. However, I do think that overcoming the inhibition and the feeling that you can't possibly do it is the one thing that's absolutely necessary. Just anybody can learn to express themselves in color and in form and in lines if they will jump in and do it. Monkeys learn to do this. Giraffes learn to do this. Sometimes it's intimidating, but the trick is to jump in it. And really, you know, some of the best artists are children who don't know that they can't do it. you know. So I think we adults sometimes think we teach ourselves that we can't do something because someone else does it better or faster or something else. But having the guts to just jump in and do it is what it really takes.
And really, that's kind of the secret to art, isn't it? Guts. Well, tonight, sure, you are going to be at the Juno Artist Gallery starting at 4:30 to talk to people about your art. And I understand that one of the things that you wanted to do was talk with people who might be interested in a sketch class for the human form with live nude models. Is that something that you think there would be a lot of interest in Juno for this kind of class?
I know that there is significant interest in Juno for this class. There, I did it for a while pre-COVID. I was doing it in a studio that I had, and we would welcome between 3 and 15 people every time I had it. So something like that has to fit into your life, but there's a demand for it. I have a list of people who are interested, and that's another thing that I would like to do this evening for anyone who feels like coming in, is to get them on that list so that when we can actually start doing that, when the health restrictions are such that we can all be in a room together, breathing on each other while we're doing this, I would love to have a list of people who want to do it. It's a great joy to me, and it's a great joy to a bunch of other people, and it's really more fun when there are multiple people do it, because you get to see each other's work and everybody does it a little bit differently. And some people are new to it and some people really know a lot about it and can give suggestions. And it's a community effort to all participate in something that is really fun to do.
So what have you chosen to display on your dedicated Artist of the Month wall? What kind of work will we see if we come by tonight?
So what I have put up are recent works that I'm working on. And when you work in oils, it takes really long time for the oil to be finished, because you sort of work in layers and one has to dry before you can do the other one. And then you put something on and then you scrape it off. And it's a long process. But I wanted to show, because I have a display there of things that I sell already, I wanted to just show people what I was working on, and a lot of it is responding to the gorgeous summer that we had. There's a lot of fireweed in my paintings and a lot of the fun stuff that go on in the summer. So I just sort of put up a little display. I'm not actually trying to sell anything particularly, but the kinds of things that I like to do, sort of recent work, some little small still lives and some landscapes and some plein air and some things that I've done in the studio, and just to show people what fun I have.
I believe it. You sound like you have fun. Starting back when you were 6 years old, learning from your neighbor. I do have to ask you this, though, is are you one of those rare people that can completely make your living off of your art? Because for many artists, it's kind of a day job, something they, escape to at night and any spare moment that they have.
Well, in addition to that, a lot of the people who contact me because they're interested in learning are doing it as a second career. They're retired people and they've needed to support themselves as I did. And they've always wanted to do art, and fitting it into their life is something that they reach late in life, which is fine. I appreciate the fact that I got to do it, started early in life and doing it. So I haven't supported myself. I've always done fine art, but I haven't supported myself with fine art. However, I had a career doing interior design and residential architecture. So I was still drawing and I was telling people how to use color and I was designing furniture. And I was making pictures of all of those things so people could see what they were doing ahead of time. So it was sort of more mechanical and product oriented, but it was still working with color and working with pencils. And it was also working with people. So after I retired from doing that, I got I had more time to paint, but I still feel like I did really well at doing the thing that I loved and actually making money at a version of it for several years.
So where do you market the bulk of your art?
So all I do, the only display that I have is at the Juno Artist Gallery. I have a lot of stuff. I don't market most of it. Most of it piles up and I give it away or I try to sell it or my kids are going to have to deal with it when I die. I don't know. There's a lot of it. And it's just, I'm really not interested in marketing it. That's the hard part. I don't want to be distracted by that. I just want to smear paint around on my canvas. And fortunately, I don't have to sell it. So that's pretty good.
Well, before we go, I wonder if a lot of our listeners are trying to figure out who might be some of your favorite artists that are out there, your inspirations. Do you have some?
I do have some. I love the color that the Impressionists use. I love a Spanish painter named Sorolla. I love beautiful portraits. So the classical academic artists that did beautiful portraits. I love Monet. I love Degas. I love Van Gogh. You know, all color. Color and vibrancy and movement and humans. Those are my favorite subject matters.
And that's what makes your art so human, right? Is all those things that humanity craves: color, beauty. So I'm really excited to hear about your gallery. And of course, your gallery exhibit, people can go all month through September. But before we go, do you want to recap what people need to know if they want to visit with you tonight?
Certainly, I'm going to be. So the gallery is in the Senate building on South Franklin Street. And I'm going to be there from 4:30 till 6. Usually we have a big First Friday gathering with lots of food and lots of people come and it's lots of fun. But then now COVID has restricted those things. So I'll be there briefly this evening. I'll have a sign-up sheet for anyone who's interested in either drawing or painting classes. And I'm also there, as all the other members of the co-op are, from time to time, because we take turns running the shop. So anybody who would like to speak to me can ask whoever is there at the gallery, and they can put them in touch with me at any time.
And in closing, why doesn't Juno have an art school? With so many wonderful artists, you'd think that this would be a natural magnet for artists to come elsewhere, learn, and paint.
I definitely agree with that. And I think that if the new Jack gets built, and we are able to keep supporting the arts the way that Juno wants to, I would love to see workshops come in. I know there are many really fine artists in the world who would love to come to Alaska because it's so gorgeous. And if it could be organized so that there were a way for them to come and do workshops, people would come from other places to do it. The artists in Juno could take advantage of that. And I think that would be a fantastic resource. And it's a natural, there are places in the Southwest that support a great economy doing things like that. And I think it's a natural thing for Juno to do as well.
Wow, I would love to have a vacation with staying in a beautiful place, overlooking the water, and then by day having art lessons with Lou Isaac. So let's hope that that's something that comes up in the future. Well, I want to thank you very much, Lou, for joining us. And again, your visit at the Juno Artist Gallery begins at 4:30 to 6 o'clock tonight, and that's when people can come and meet you personally. Good luck with your opening tonight.
Thank you, Rhonda. Thanks for having me here today.
This is Richard Stokes. This poem is titled Bone Music. From glacier's face, fingers of powdered sugar creep seaward down alpine ridges hued yellow and bronze by September frost. Cottonwoods glow golden against dark spruce, and paired magpies, resplendent in formal black and white, fuss at the carcass of a late season silver. Devil's Club green, already sucked down thorny throats. Drumbeat of autumn's retreat sinks deep in my bones.
Richard Stokes reciting his poem Bone Music, an ode to autumn, here on Juno Afternoon.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, providing Juno with clothing for every occasion, bonfires, weddings, casual dinner parties, and more. Online at nuggetoutfitter.com or in person at the Mendenhall Mall.
Thank you, everyone, for lending your ears and your mind's eye to Juno Afternoon as we cap off our week by turning skyward. Brenda Wright, the program manager for the Juno Audubon Society, is here to spotlight birds that she's had in her binoculars as of late. So, Brenda, with two glorious days of sunshine, you must have had some pretty good bird watching this week.
Yes, it was ever so nice to get a chance to watch the shorebirds and the colors all sparkle and get to see the iridescence of the feathers that you never get to see so much in gray light.
Well, it looks like this Labor Day weekend, things are going to be looking gray. But tell us about the three birds that you've chosen to spotlight this week.
This is an interesting combination. We have a raptor, a shorebird, and a duck. All three of them live here in the winter, at least, for sure. And the northern goshawk lives here year round. But it's so uncommon to see it. It's like seeing your neighbor peeking out of the blinds of their house once a year.
So how do you see the goshawk then to even know that it's around?
Well, if you're lucky enough to know where they often hunt, then you can find them. They can be seen around the West Glacier Trail, Dredge Lake area. They eat small mammals and birds, and they do like rabbits. And so the snowshoe rabbits live around Dredge Lake.
So can you hear these birds at least?
Yes, yes. They do have a nice raptor scream.
I don't know how nice and raptor scream go together in one phrase. Let's take a listen. So the American widgeon, what kind of a bird is that?
Well, it's a dabbling duck, just like a mallard, and it's very similar in size to a mallard. So a dabbling duck is the one that eats vegetation, aquatic insects, that kind of thing. So you often see them with their rump in the air, with their head completely underwater, trying to get those best goodies on the bottom.
From the pictures that you sent us of the American widgeon, it almost looks like somebody had a bucket of paint and kind of smudged these birds. There's like white on the beak and patches of white feathers.
Yes, it's a very interesting bird, especially in breeding plumage. The entire top of the head has got a white line, just like a white line on the road. For its old name, it was called a bald pate, which is like a bald person that you would look at in the distance and see a shining head.
That term pate might strike people as kind of different.
It's a very old barbershop kind of word for British word for head.
Okay. So what kind of a sound should we be on the lookout for the widgeon? Is it normally quack, 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 quack?
No, I'm afraid the mallard's got that completely under control. There, nobody else is allowed to quack. So the widgeon has to go sideways a little bit and make some whistling noises and some other gurgling noises with its tone.
All right, let's listen. So our last bird this week that you selected is the rock sandpiper, and it's a little more melodious than the first two, thank goodness. All right, let's listen.
Yep, and this little bird loves rocky shores, and it spends winters with us. And the really nice thing about it, since it's very gray when it's not in its breeding colors, is that it hangs with the black turnstones that also live on rocky shores. And so if you see the black and white flash of the turnstones, you can look more closely to see if the rock sandpiper is with them.
So we are coming up to fall weather here. You can definitely feel it in the air. What kind of impact does that have on bird migration? Do you think the temperature triggers more movement?
You know, the thing that they really like to have is a following wind. So sometimes when we have a big storm, they might huddle down and just chow down for a little bit. And the first time there's a nice break, zoom, they're all gone. So now's a pretty good time to try and look for the migrants.
So when the weather clears, do you think that'll be the time that they suddenly come into view?
Well, they'll be passing through for another couple of weeks for sure, coming down from the north, but it hasn't gotten real chilly up there either. So we have a good chance to see a great many more migrants in September.
So this weekend, this wet Labor Day weekend, presumably, what are you going to be on the lookout for? What are you going to be doing aside from wearing a lot of rain gear?
Yep. Well, I'm going to be checking the shoreline on a rising tide, especially around good places for food, and maybe see some more dowitchers or both kinds of yellow legs or sandpipers. It's hard to say what might pass through. And who knows, maybe the northern goshawk will sit in a tree and let us glance at it again. They do territorial flights a lot. So if you happen to find out where they live, they don't sit in a nest all year, of course, then you can more often see them hunting from the air.
All right. Well, we want to thank you very much, Brenda Wright, Program Manager for the Juneau Audubon Society. Thanks for being here with us to spotlight some birds of interest.
Thanks so much, Rhonda.
All right. Thank you. And that will do it for Juneau Afternoon. Broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at ktoo.org, and repeated at 4 on KRNN 102.7 FM. We want to give special thanks to Richard Stokes for sharing his poems September and Bone Music. Juneau Afternoon is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture Team, which includes Shelley Delaney, KXLL Chandra Boom, and the leader of our team, Cheryl Snyder. Our theme music for our program is by Indian Agent, and to listen to interviews, see links to anything that we have talked about, or to be on our show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org, Juneau Afternoon.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Clinkett and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.